You are listening to www.infinitesmile.org. Enjoy these Zen-inspired talks given by Michael McAllister, followed up by question and answer exchanges with groups of his students.
I've had Gandhi's quote, "True beauty is my aim," going through my head all day. I have no idea why. It's just one of those things, just true beauty is my aim. Again and again and again, just this cyclical, beautiful repetition. And it's, in my humble estimation, a beautifully secular way of looking at enlightened practice. True beauty is our aim. In the best of all possible circumstances. And true beauty is the opening. True beauty is the going from the contraction into the expansion. It is going from affinity to infinity. So moving from clinging or attachment to letting go, from affinity to infinity, and then back, that becomes Buddha. That becomes an unfolding of Christ consciousness. That becomes enlightenment. That is an awakened being walking down the street. Is one who can go from affinity to infinity and back. Are they changed when they go to infinity? Yes. Otherwise, it's a regression. When you climb up the ladder, you have a different view from the higher rungs. Doesn't mean that a higher rung is a better rung. It just means it's a more uncontracted view. You have a different view now of the world than you did 30, 40 years ago. Especially you guys. You know. Those of you younger than 30 have, it's a far different view now. It's a better view, you know, in some respects. But if you think about it, but don't think too carefully about it, being able to open to the infinity and then take that openness into our typical contracted inertia changes the inertia radically. And it changes everybody else in the process. So essentially, the continual opening from the small self or ego to the big self, or the awakened self, that continual opening, that continual expansion is what we could label as, or what we could call, true beauty. All of us know what it is when we see it. It's a felt sense. Sometimes it buckles our knees. Sometimes we just want to start weeping because it hits such an amazing chord within our own sense of spirit. It vibrates and reverberates. And we meet this true beauty. We meet this big self from the small self. We unfold into that expansion by opening our mind. And we do this by essentially freeing ourselves from our identification with thought. We free ourselves from the identification that we have with thought. That opens our mind. But that's not enough. We also have to open our body. And we open our body, we relax our body just like we relaxed our mind. we relax our body into a freedom from our habitual addiction to feelings. Ooh, that feels good. Give me more of that. That tastes good. Yeah, let me have some more of that. Instead of being in that space of greed, or I do not want to ever feel that again, aversion. Okay, instead of being in that egoic tilt, back and forth, back and forth. Instead of being there, we open to what's beyond that. We open to what can actually experience the feeling. Who is the experiencer of the feeling, or the experiencer of the thought? Who is it that can watch this thought or this feeling? Mind and body start to become experiences for something that is actually bigger. We start to be able to think about our thinking and then watch that instead of, I guess we would call that metacognition. We actually are in a post-metacognitive place where we actually are no longer even identified with our thoughts or feelings. So this true beauty, as scary as this may sound to the ego, this true beauty is always there. It's always there. And it's lived through an open mind and an open body. And the intersection of this open mind and open body is in the vastness of an open heart. An open heart that can walk through the world will change it. An open heart that can walk through the world is true beauty. So this open, uncontracted mind that is not identifying with thought, and this open, uncontracted body that is not identifying itself with pain and pleasure, okay, meets in this infinitely open and beautiful field, the open heart. And it's big enough to hold the entire world's pain. This infinite heart is big enough to hold all the world's pain and all of the world's glory at once. Nothing is outside of it. In fact, all things arise within it. It is the divine interior landscape of all beings, this open heart. And because it can contain everything and reflect everything without attaching to anything, it can stand right in the white hot fire of life without ever flinching. It never moves. It can be with everything all at once. It is totally undefended. There is nothing in an open heart, a deeply open heart, that is defended, which is also why it's so beautiful. It's why it is true beauty. It is totally undefended. Nothing can cling to it, and it clings to nothing. Just like you cannot cling to your reflection in a mirror, and the mirror cannot cling to you. Yet the mirror reflects all things put in front of it effortlessly, with total peace, grace, and ease. So in this vast open field, this open, truly open heart, where an open mind and an open body meet, this infinity flourishes. And a full awareness guides every single bit of movement that can occur. And when this kind of awareness informs all movement, it even informs the intention behind the movement. What we ultimately come up with here is compassion. Compassion cannot help but spring effortlessly from this place of a totally uncontracted heart. This vast openness offers compassion to the world. It's not something you work at. It just happens spontaneously. And when you're there, you're helpful. Always. Because you see yourself through others and as others. The open heart sees itself through you as you. Open mind, an open body, totally relaxed and soft mind, relaxed and soft body, can meet any situation with a radical intimacy. Instead of having an affinity for things, it is the infinity of all things. And then once that's realized, when it brings that back into the world, that very body becomes the body of enlightenment. It becomes an awakened body that we call it by various names, but it's all you have in front of you and behind you and around you right now. All you need to be able to take those steps into radical truth is what you have right now. So true beauty was Gandhi's aim. And it's available for any person, available to any person that can be open. That instead of identifying with mind, they identify with absolutely nothing. They identify with emptiness. They identify with the unmanifest. They identify with infinity. And then they come back with no identity, with nothing other than just a relaxed, expansive, awakened spaciousness that we call a human being. And that simplicity bowls people over and changes the world. That utter simplicity, that ordinary person can change the world.
I'm a little confused about a truly open heart is expanding to all things and has an affinity towards everything. But then if we're human...
Which we're assuming you are.
Okay.
Right.
We're assuming I am. It seems also natural to have affinities towards certain people more than others.
Yeah.
And yet you said to be open to everything, you have to put up no defenses.
Mm-hmm.
Yet if you feel like you need certain people more,
mm-hmm.
it seems like you would put up defenses when it comes to those people.
Sure.
So.
Right.
I'm just
so is your question then, you know, if you, being human, how can you be both? at once. In other words, how can you put up, how can you hang on to the things you love dearly, yet at the same time let go of everything?
How can you love everyone equally when inside you actually love some people more?
Yeah, good. Yeah, how can you love everybody equally when you love some people more?
Yeah,
that's a great question. Next. we love in two ways. We love in two ways. And the one way is contracted, mm-hmm. and that's exclusive. Mm-hmm. It's certain. It's for, in other words, for certain people, and it's certain. Okay? Mm-hmm. And we also love this way. Okay? Both are fine. Both are fine. I'm not judging. The teaching does not judge. Mm-hmm. It's just that this kind of love, if it doesn't inform this type of love, mm-hmm. then the contracted love that we typically feel for specific people is diminished. It becomes, instead of an egoic dance, which is the big love, okay, the openness, it becomes an egoic negotiation. Right? Big love is an effortless dance. Did I say egoic dance? Yeah, well, that was totally wrong. Mm-hmm. It's a non-egoic dance. It's a dance without bound. It becomes the cosmic swirl. You and your partner, whoever it may be, either an intimate, an old friend, or someone, some stranger you meet on the street, we can actually be in that open space of full expansive love at all times. Typically, however, being human, the normal way of loving, is little more than I'll give you this for that, and if you don't give me this, I'm not giving you that, and so forth. And that becomes deeply contracted and ultimately is dysfunctional. The seeds for really intense dysfunction are sown in that spot of a contracted love. Is it normal? Well, yeah, because that's the way most beings experience intimacy. They experience intimacy as being something you covet, something you grab onto. I'm going to preserve this one because this one's special. This is my boyfriend or my girlfriend, or this is my wife, my mom, my dad, whatever. That's a special kind of love. You're right. But it's the seeds for that special kind of love become intensified. The growth, rather, from those seeds can get to be really tangled, okay, and can create pain. The love that is equal to all beings is like the sunshine. The sun does not discriminate on who it decides to shine on. It shines equally to all things. Miraculously, if a contracted love can gain a through line into the expansive love, it changes. And what happens is that kind of love enlightens. That kind of love awakens souls. It awakens spirit within those souls. Okay? So that a relationship can become a spiritual practice. There's no criticism to speak of. There's no contempt. There's no defensiveness. There's no stonewalling. Dr. John Gottman calls those the four horsemen of relationship. What happens to those when a relationship that's typically an egoic negotiation becomes informed by the infinite love? What happens? They fall away. And instead of the four horsemen haunting the relationship, potentially, it becomes something that is truly expansive. Each party in the relationship expands. And that's just with another partner. What about a group? Intimacy can be something that is met. This love can be brought to the table in any circumstance. And it expands that circumstance into something we can call ultimate life. And it's yours to use. This is your tool to use. Because it's all of our tools. This is in everybody's toolbox. It's not normal, but awakening is not normal. caught me there. I had a sip of water.
So, coming from a place of openness and non-judgment and fearlessness, how can... I guess I think, like, to walk through the Tenderloin at 2 in the morning is a pretty dumb idea.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, how can you justify that from when you learn all these other things?
Right, right. Because what all these other things teach, what the Dharma really teaches, is an appropriate response. What is Buddha? An appropriate statement. An appropriate response. And so what is the appropriate response? The teaching does not tell us to say nothing is ever wrong. The teaching actually points us in the direction of a discriminating awareness as opposed to a contracted egoic relationship with things. Okay? It's a different kind of fearlessness. All right? It's not fearlessness like, watch me, I will now walk through Central Park late at night. Okay? Which everybody should do. It's a pretty amazing thing. Just as a recommendation. Just as a recommendation. Okay. No. No. Undefended. but in all seriousness, that is not something that's not something that brings wisdom and compassion into the moment for yourself. All right? In other words, the teaching points to this non-duality where it's all one thing. And the danger of that is, if you take it to the extreme, that we could, well, then let's go play Bart Tag. Let's go, because if the train kills me, it doesn't matter, right? It's all one thing. Mm-mm. Your job is to recognize the infinite nature of all things, and then that's only half the journey. The other half of the journey is what? Coming back, right? So you bring the infinity back into your awareness. You bring a discriminating awareness into all of your situations, be they relationships or be they activities. A discriminating awareness is different from judgment, because judgment is contracted. A discriminating awareness watches and can note what is going on, as opposed to watching and then clinging to a story or a future outcome based on what is happening. It's not clinging. It's open.
But if you believe, like, everyone to be inherently good, how can you still practice without totally avoiding those areas or those parts of your life? I mean, because there's still human beings and things going on there that might, in some way, you know, be beneficial to your practice and also to your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can you... you know, let those things in without being like, oh no, I can't go there because, like, I might get mugged or something.
Well, I guess I would start with the very first thing you said, which was, you know, if you believe all human beings are inherently good, we would have a really interesting philosophical discussion there probably, because that sounds to me like a pretty interesting attachment. Could be.
That all human beings are inherently good.
Yeah, it's a great story. And I don't know that it's wrong. But if we let that contraction... all human beings are good. Even that guy that is holding a knife to my throat. He's good at his core.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? He probably is on a good day, but he's having a bad one, and you're in his way. You know? So what is the appropriate response? Well, you could make a case that the appropriate response is to keep him from enacting his own unconsciousness. This teaching does not tell you to give in. It tells you to give up to whatever is happening and then respond from that infinite spaciousness. Respond from an open heart. You are not responding because you hate the guy who's holding the knife to your throat. You're responding to keep him from enacting his clinging on you. You are desperately trying, in most cases, never to let someone's closed view of you diminish your view of them. That's true. Okay? Can you be open to people who are closed to you? And then respond from that place. Because if you can, you will change everyone's life in the process. There will be a thunderous tone to every single one of your steps with that openness. Now, I know this is kind of a backhanded way of approaching your question, and I don't know if I've answered it to your satisfaction, but whether or not people are inherently good, people are inherently people.
Yeah.
And now how do we respond to all of them? Because guess what? They're not separate from us. Each of us has an inner beast. Each of us has an inner Christ, Buddha. It's all there, all at once. Our goal is to evolve. And instead of falling prey consistently to something that squeezes and contracts, it's to open. It's to allow true beauty to be our aim. And then fly. You know? Is there more to your question? Because I know I only took on one piece of it, and I know that there was more.
No, well, I guess I just, like, the whole 2 months I was there, it's like, you know, you're constantly being taught that, you know, kind of everything has, like, a Buddha nature.
Everything has a Buddha nature. That's
and
right.
So I guess I just find it hard, because there's this part of me that wants to be, like, open to everyone. Mm-hmm. Just kind of, like, just, you know, receive everyone with the same sort of, like, peacefulness and relaxedness that mm-hmm. I receive, like, my mother and my father.
Right.
And, you know, my best friends.
Right.
And
but that's great.
So, like, I practice that, but at the same time, there's this part of me that is, you know, kind of looking over my shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's just kind of, how do I balance the two?
Sometimes it's important to look over your shoulder. Sometimes it's important to look over your shoulder. If you let the fear, though, that causes you to look over your shoulder govern you unconsciously, it will diminish every single person that you meet. Can you be conscious of your fear? If you can be conscious of your fear as it arises, then you're giving a gift to yourself and to anybody who might be on the other side of your shoulder. What is an appropriate response, David? What is an appropriate response? And this isn't diving into some relativistic world that, you know, where everything goes. No, the ethical code that we set up is don't harm. Don't harm another, and don't harm yourself, because it's exactly the same thing. It's all part of the big heart. Got one more? Yeah.
Just a quick one.
Quick one.
But first, before I start, I'm reading Genjo Koan, and there's mm-hmm. this lovely phrase that seems very appropriate here. In attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds grow. Very poetic description, just from you described.
I think that's beautiful.
While you were talking about an open heart and infinite openness, for a minute, I got really scared because what you describe in conventional terms is sainthood. I mean, that's, we talk about, you know, we're raised thinking of saints and how they behave, and that's exactly what you described, the behavior. We're all, this is a class for saints.
Yeah, I felt really funny putting that in the course description, though.
Well, what has scared me away, I'm not up to walking on water.
Yeah.
Actually, you are.
I said it, for just a minute I was scared.
Yeah.
And then I put it into more.
Well, let that fear inform every single bit of what you're doing, because you should be desperately afraid. Ego better be horrified of what's happening right now. Okay? I think that's a quaint way of putting it, that we're talking about sainthood, but you know what, Paul? Of course we are. What is a saint? A saint is someone who is helpful. What is a bodhisattva? A bodhisattva is somebody that is helpful. It's somebody that is helpful, and that's what we're trying to do in the most simple, ordinary way. In the way that we kiss our husband, our wife, our kids goodbye in the morning, you know, when we leave for work. In the way we drink our coffee. In the way we eat our eggs. Can we literally just start opening to everyone all the time, no matter who they are, and then respond? And respond from a place that is informed by infinity, that is informed by infinity instead of a contraction of affinity. It's not about preferences. Preferences point us directly to our attachments. Our attachments cause weeds to grow and blossoms to fall.
But you help me phrase or understand why I cease being afraid, because the saints are up here, and what you're doing in the process, the practice you're talking about, brings it down here into our morning coffee.
Yeah.
Or our evening salutation.
Good. St. Paul, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
I'll beat you all out.